Next is item T, which is also an action item. It's judicial workload assessment, the 2014 update of the judicial needs assessment, and a proposed revision to the methodology that we use to prioritize new judgeships. And we welcome Judge Lorna Oxley, Chair of the Judicial Council Workload Assessment Advisory Committee, and Ms. Leah Rose Goodwin, Judicial Council Office of Court Research. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see all of you. We even made it in the rain. All right. The first one that we're going to talk about, well, first off, I'm the Chair of the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee. We call it WAC. It's a new name, so I wanted to give you guys an acronym for that. And we're charged with making recommendations to you all, or to present options for you all to think about in the way that we calculate and analyze our needs. You should all know that the reason why I went into law is because I'm terrible with numbers. And that's why I'm the chair of this group. And I have Leah here to help us with the numbers, and I'm here to give you the sort of the big picture from a judicial perspective, and she will answer any detailed questions about statistics and prioritization and ranking. The first recommendation we're asking you to approve today is the judicial needs report that we have to give to the legislature in even-numbered years. And consistent with previous reports, it shows that the branch needs more judgeships. There's 35 courts that need judges. It's specifically 270 judges are needed. And I want to take a moment to make sure that you guys understand that it's not that we need 270 appointments, because these are not calculated in whole numbers. So it's 270, the workload says we need 270 more people, or 270 more people doing the work, but in different counties there's a fractional interest. And that becomes important in my presentation in a minute on the other presentation. So it's 270, based on the statistics and the way that we calculate it, is what the state of California needs in judgeships. But it's actually 250 appointments. So I want to make sure everybody understood that. So how do we calculate this? For those of you that are newer council members, and even for me, I have to keep reminding myself how we calculate this, and it's very detailed and done by Leah and her team. But we come up with a case weight, and that case weight estimates what a judge does from the time they get the initial filing through disposition and any post-disposition activity. And we use separate case weights for different types of cases, and we calculated using 15 courts in 2010, asking judges to essentially do a time study and tell us what they were doing all day long. And we used what they were doing to calculate and use the and to get the case weights. And then we multiply the case weights by a three-year average of filings, divide that by the amount of time the minutes that the judge used, and we come up with a amount of time it takes, for example, for a judge to process a felony. Okay, so everyone get that? That's how we do it. I don't do it. That's how Leah and her team do it. So, consistent with that, what our need that we've calculated, and it's in your report, it's 269 plus, rounded up to 270. And that's down. Years prior, it was in the 300s, 350. And so that we believe that's because of the decline in filings. But nevertheless, even though we have less need statewide, we still have a great need, particularly in the Inland Empire. And so what we're asking today is for you all to approve this recommendation that the need for the state of California is 269 judges. And if you guys have any questions about how we got there or any discrepancies that you all see in the report, we'd be happy to answer it.
Justice Baxter?
Just for my own information, is the calculation similar to the calculations made by the National Center for State Courts, or do they use a different approach?
Leah's telling me what to say. It's the same approach.
The workload study was done in partnership with the National Center for State Courts, and it uses the methodology that they have developed.
Thank you. Judge McCabe, and then Justice Hall.
Thank you.
Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you, Chief. First, some questions. Number one, why did the committee decide at this time after approximately 13 years of use of methodology to alter the equation now.
Judge, we haven't presented the second recommendation just yet, so can we go through the...
Just the first?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll take a pause here for a minute for questions on the first part, and then...
So my question will be first for the second part?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You tricked me. We didn't change the methodology for this.
Yeah. No, and I the comment I have is I have no problem with the first recommendation and the workload analysis. I'll note that I've... worked with Leah a number of times, and particularly on the WAFM, and I have all the confidence in the world that those calculations were true and correct.
Thank you. Justice Hall, then Judge Rosenberg.
So it turns out that my question is second on the first proposal. One thing that you said that caught my ear on the methodology was some type of time study where judges were they observed, or were this self-reporting is how they spent their day?
It was self-reporting, and then the report went to the National Center for the State Courts, so it was anonymous.
Okay, so in effect, they kept timesheets or something?
Essentially, it was a time study.
I'll bet you that those who had been in private practice really loved that.
I was on the committee back then. It wasn't that controversial. People were willing to do it, and we'll be asking in the future courts to volunteer to do it again.
Okay, thank you.
Judge Rosenberg?
Just two quick things. First of all, in terms of terminology, we're talking about judicial officers.
Yes.
And we're talking about full-time equivalents, essentially.
Yes.
Okay. Secondly, the question is going to inevitably come up. I'm sure it already has. And I'd like to know how you intend to address it. In terms of evaluating the judicial needs, court by court, the evaluation obviously has come up with 269 full-time equivalents needed, but it also has seen some courts that they assess as over. So how are you going to address that?
Me? Our little committee? I don't think we're going to touch that one.
Well, someone is going to have to deal with that issue because it's going to come up through the other branches for sure.
And the chart shows which ones the study comes up with that have over what they need.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're ready to move to recommendation number two. All right, number two is... is something that was, I'll answer your question first, why did we do this? This was something that issue was raised by the smaller member courts on our committee that wanted to, and just so everyone's on the same page, it's how you prioritize judgeships if and when they are ever given to the courts from the legislature. And the smaller member court said, well, wait a second, we need to have a judge be assigned to our court. We want to get on that list, but we're only a 0.8 or a 0.9. So what we decided to do was to look at it and how would it affect the rest of the branch if, in fact, we lowered the threshold so that somebody that had a 0.8 or a 0.9 could receive a judge. And the way I think about it is I'm in court every day, all day, working really hard doing cases, and if you had to tell me that all the work that I have to do 4.5 days a week wouldn't get done if you were a two-judge court because there wouldn't be someone there to do it. And so in the smaller courts, it makes a big difference compared to the larger courts that can absorb it and make us all work harder. So that was the reason why the member courts brought it to us, and that's what the statistics show. I think since you guys are all pretty knowledgeable, we'll go right to the PowerPoint. You can see what happened. So on the previous list, it shows that on the previous report, it shows that all the courts that need judges, and that was the 34 courts. And it shows that you can't really read that PowerPoint too well, but it's 269. We've already talked about that. What's different if we lower the threshold from a full time equivalent or one anything over one is Del Norte, Lassen, and El Dorado, who are a 0.9. would then be on the list to receive a judgeship in the first, rather than having to wait until they got so much work that they were over one. Okay? And the we thought you should know that once you get this list, then what do you do with it? Well, then Leah and her team, they do a priority ranking table. So this is just the first priority ranking table. For example, if we got 10 judges, you can see that San Bernardino is on there 3 times. So it doesn't just go because San Bernardino has 57 judges. They don't take all of them. Mm-hmm. It gets prioritized and ranked based on a very complicated mathematical formula that I cannot explain, but Leah could. And so there's a rank that's done, and then the 10 new judges would be allocated pursuant to their relative need. So if you go to the next slide, you can see that it, based on relative need, in the first 50, Lassen would now suddenly be entitled to receive a judgeship, but the other two courts Del Norte and El Dorado would not, because their relative need is lower than the other courts that are on that first 50. And so if you go to the next slide, you can see that Lassen and Del Norte, then in the second set of, or third, it's really the third, we've already had our first 50, we're talking about the second 50, this would be the third 50, Lassen and Del Norte, I'm sorry, Del Norte and El Dorado, then would suddenly, they would come up. But the critical point for anyone to understand this is no one's losing a judgeship, and I know that was something that people were saying, well, wait, I'm losing my judgeship. They're not losing the judgeship. It's just being pushed off farther down the road based on the court's relative need. So that was the reason I gave you was the smaller courts asked us in our member group to look at it, and the result is that some courts would be receiving a judgeship if and when they are ever given at a later time.
Thank you. Judge McCabe, does that answer your question?
It does, although I is this comment period?
Yes.
All right, thank you. First, I do want to thank WAC for their work. One of my court's judges is a member of that, and I appreciate the work that is done and is very tedious. It's extensive, and you have to love numbers and crunching them. And so my many thanks to you. Number two, I note that my home court of Merced is unaffected by the proposed change, so therefore I throw that out. I don't have a dog in this fight. Three, I note that I vacillated on this issue, and I think what my voice is maybe an alternate voice. My initial reaction was I thought that was great coming from a court that was small, particularly when I started, we were in a small category. And because of changes, SB 56 and then conversion of commissionerships, we're now in the cluster two or the medium range, a small medium. And so I get and understand the importance and impact that additional resources, particularly in the form of a judge and the supporting staff that goes with every judge funding, has on a court. I thought about this, and I thought appropriate that Judge Branlin used many terms that were in the medical field. We've heard that in a couple of discussions that we're in a war, we're under siege, etc. I think of this council as a MASH unit. We're constantly triaging, evaluating and prioritizing, and then giving direction to provide resources for care. So I think it's apt in this particular instance. As I look at this issue, recommendation number two is troubling to me now. Not initially, but now. I have no problem with the calculations. I think it's a policy issue. In 2001, the methodology was developed. I recall it was about 2005. NCSC did a survey. It was about 355 judges were needed then. The latest update is 269.8 are needed now. However, the SAGE approach was to only go after the most critical 150 needs and spread those out over a three-year period. And I believe Chief Justice Ron George and the council pursued that strategy and were successful for the first of the three legs. And then here we are on the second. That was approved in 2007, yet funding continues to not be appropriated for that purpose. 13 years of using the same methodology. I think there's a couple of concerns we ought to think about. Is one, is I think the legislature and the governor might have a problem with expending monies for a full-time position and staff, and I think it's about $1 million per position, so the judge and support staff, clerks, although probably carving out security, it may be a little less now, for a position that is not full-time. Number two, we've in essence had a line. People have been standing in line since 2007 because they have demonstrated full-time needs for judges. The formula is now changed to allow somebody that doesn't have a full-time need to get in line. And that notes that originally, out of the 355, we only took 155. So there are 205 that didn't even get to stand in line. The number's been changed now to 269.8, so there's another 119 full-time positions statewide that aren't even in line, based on our current strategy. It's out in the distant future. So we're, in essence, changing the formula in order to achieve a desired result. I don't mean to be divisive. My instinct initially was from my small to medium court perspective, but I understand what my position is. The council is here to issue policy on a statewide perspective and basis. And when I gave that careful consideration, it led me to the conclusion that altered my initial instinct. Because the initial instinct was what I lived with. And of course, that would be benefit the smaller courts. And I don't discount the need and the impact. I'm troubled also by the statistics. Our brethren in San Bernardino and Riverside County have enormous needs. If you look at the statistics, in essence, San Bernardino is doing 100% of the work with 42% of the judicial resources. Phenomenal. Riverside, 100% of the work with 48% of the judicial resources. I have a problem as a doctor giving medicine to somebody that has a less than full-time need when I have patients that are in critical need. Inland Empire has had massive growth, and I recognize that. I'm not from the Inland Empire. I don't have any vested interest with them. I don't even have any relatives there. Oh, except Ms. Lau. So it troubles me in that respect as well. Three, I note that the issue previously was going to appear on this agenda. It arrived to the presiding judges after we'd had our last meeting. So we haven't had a meeting on this, and our next meeting isn't until the end of January. So an email was sent out, and if I recall correctly from the presiding judges, three responded. Quite frankly, I don't think they understood the issue. No offense to those listening, but if you're looking at this, it doesn't dawn on you unless you're a number-crunching wonk that loves this kind of stuff. I've got my hand raised. Versus those that don't. And it's not meant to be insulting. It's just fact of life. And I think this is a type of an issue that should be probably vetted a little more. And it probably wasn't apparent to me until probably today. I mean, I've sat here and thought about this for months. I contacted Leah. I asked her to provide some of the charts here. so that you can comparatively see under a full-time versus the 0.08 methodology. And it was helpful to do a comparison so you could actually see the impact, who would be affected. And it's minimal. So we're talking about really San Bernardino losing one, Lassen getting one. And I'm not anti-Lassen, and I see that they have an extraordinary need. However, we have some other courts here that have full-time needs, and I think from a statewide basis, I would be remiss if I did not urge this council on to accept number one, but number two, to table it until it does go back to SEAC and TCPJAC, and they have an opportunity to vet and discuss it actually at our next meeting. Final comment is I don't think, and I hope I don't believe that this is of, maybe it is of urgency, but I think it's something that can be modified by this body at a later time, unless I'm wrong. I saw that we have, on even years, there's reporting, and I don't know, are we locked in for those even years, or is the council able to alter its recommendation to the legislature and the governor? And that's not a rhetorical question. I'll allow them to answer that after the next speaker. So thank you very much for allowing me to go on. I'll leave you with the old adage, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And in this case, we have many full-time positions that should be filled first, and then our part-times somewhere in the mix be filled at a later time. Thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you. Thank you. Justice Hull, then Judge Slough.
Thank you, Chief.
Judge Rosenberg.
Judge McCabe's comments bring a couple of questions to my mind. In response to Justice Baxter's question, if I heard correctly, this is a methodology that is embraced by the National Center of State Courts. Did I hear that correctly?
Let me clarify. The methodology that we use to calculate judge need, so the methodology we use to establish the case weights and multiply times filings to come up with an estimate of the number of judges needed statewide, that's the methodology that's been endorsed by the National Center for State Courts. The prioritization and the way that we determine which courts are first in line for new judgeships is not something that we partner with the NCSC on. I believe they helped us when we developed it initially. It's a methodology that's actually, it's the same one that they use to apportion seats in Congress, so it's a known mathematical formula. So let me just clarify that that's the portion that the NCSC consults on.
Thank you. As to the needs portion of it then, that is based on NCSC methodology,
right. Yep.
Has that methodology been accepted, validated in other parts of the country as being a reasonable predictor of needs? You mentioned something about Congress. Has it been accepted elsewhere?
The judicial needs assessment methodology that the National Center has developed is like their it's a package or a type of study that is endorsed and used in many other states to measure judicial need. The types of matters heard in different states vary, so the case weights, the names of the types of cases may be different, but the underlying method by which we arrive at the judge need numbers is fairly consistent among the states that use NCSC's method. Yes.
Okay, thank you. And my last question, if I could, actually, is for Judge McCabe, listening to your comments and your concerns. Is it your thought that if we, I shouldn't say return to, because we haven't departed from, but continue to use the methodology that we have for the past 13 years, that would ease your concerns that you've expressed here today, or is there some third possibility here?
Well, number one, I won't take credit for having the definitive answer, so I hope I'm not projecting that. Number two, the response really deals with recommendation number one, which is developing the need. I have no problem with that. And based on their assessment, they need about 270 judges. No question, no problem. I think that's accurate. The problem I have is with number two and altering the formula to lowering the threshold from a full-time down to a part-time, which is 0.80, about three-quarter, a little over three-quarter. I I think there's pragmatic and political problems with that issue, and so I'm raising that. I may be completely voted down, and that's fine. That's what we do here. This is what the chief encourages, and so I'm following that directive and making sure the alternative voice is heard. I would like, and I'm suggesting for number two, that if it goes and we have a meeting, which we have a joint meeting in January in Sacramento in late January for both the presiding judges and the CEOs, and the sense is yeah, this is something we think is okay, then as I'm okay with it.
Okay, and just as long as I have the floor, I'll ask, do we have the luxury of time to further assess this?
Yes.
Or statutorily, are we required to make a decision before the end of 2014?
No, there's no requirement. And, part of the reason we felt like this was a good time to do it is that there are currently no new judgeships at stake, so it's a fairly neutral time to bring up the item, but there's no... We don't need to submit it to anyone or report on it. It would just only become a factor if there were judgeships authorized for the branch that we needed to allocate or prioritize.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. Judge Slough, then Judge Rubin, then Judge Rosenberg.
So first I want to say that this item was on the agenda, I think, at the last Judicial Council meeting, and I want to thank Justice Miller and others. It came to my attention as I was preparing for the meeting, and it was new to me. And as the chair of the presiding judges, I wanted to assure that, as Judge McCabe points up, that we did have an opportunity to inform the presiding judges, at least provide them with the materials so that they could weigh in on their thoughts and views. And so, consistent with that, the item was pulled off the agenda, and I emailed to the presiding judges all of the materials that had been submitted for us today. And Justice McCabe is
hey,
correct.
Elevation? Oh, thank you. You said Justice.
You told me I have to call you that.
Touche. Touche.
I digress. So in any event, Mr. McCabe is correct that we did get very few responses, but I do want to read to you one in particular, and it is consistent with a couple of phone calls that I received. And I think it points up the issue as it relates to the small courts. I will state, Justice McCabe says he started off with a yes and went to a middle ground and then kind of came to the no, I don't think this is what we should do. And I'm going to tell you that I am the inverse of that. I started off with no, we can't do this. But I also, you all see who's number one on the list. And as I stepped back and looked at it, and then I got to the lukewarm water portion, and then I received the email and a couple of calls, I went to the yes side. Let me read you the email. I support the revision, as smaller courts are disproportionately impacted by judicial vacancies. Many of our courts are spread over a large geographic area, making it more difficult to have economies of scale or to move cases from location to location to promote judicial economy. This is not to downplay the significant need of the larger courts, particularly those in the Inland Empire. If I am down 0.8 of a judge, that means I have a 15 to 20% vacancy rate in terms of its practical application. In a two-judge court, that could translate to a 50% vacancy depending on the overall caseload. That email made me stop and think about what is the distinction between, a difference between, the impact to a small court and a larger court, and that is this. If they have a 0.8 need and they have two judges, and now they don't have another judge because they're not at a full, they're at almost a constitutional crisis because they don't have enough people to call their cases. In a larger court, If we, at a one full 1%, if we need someone, it means a difference in our caseloads. We just pile up the piles and call more cases. It doesn't create the same potential crisis. Hard, yes. Need, yes. Necessary, absolutely. But a real distinction in the difference between 0.8 and 1.0, I believe. I also had an email, and this was maybe prescient. It was November 3rd, and it said, my only concern is what happens if Prop 47 passes. And I don't quite know how that fits into the formula. But again, I think that we're all addressing Prop 47. So I think you see that, and I've had heard comments similar to Judge McCabe's as well. So I think that really when it comes down to the presiding judges, no, we have not heard from all 58. And no, we haven't had a full briefing to have the benefit of having Leah come and explain the process. And yes, it is very detailed, and many of us may not understand it to the extent that we can and should and would if we had that benefit. But I think really we do kind of fall into these two categories. I think it is a policy issue. I think it is an important policy issue. And I just wanted to share my perspective with all of you on that.
Thank you, Judge Slough. Thank you. Judge Rubin, I think Judge Stout, and Judge Rosenberg.
Well, thank you, Chief. I just want to start first by thanking the WAC for their very difficult and hard work. I'm not a numbers person either, so I appreciate all the hard work, especially you, Lauren. I know you're as numbers phobic as I am. And while I think what I get from these charts, and I understand from Judge Oxney that this is not so much anybody losing a judge so much as the timing of getting the judges, whether it's in this next group, which doesn't exist, or in the third group, which doesn't exist, but that it's more about timing than actually getting. However, I also perceive this as a significant process impact in how we as a council and we as a branch do business. And since there's nothing imminent in terms of these judges being distributed, since we don't yet have the funding for them, what would the harm be in a more robust discussion at the PJ, the PJ's committee or at the CIAC committee? And also, I would like, if I had my druthers, to see a report that came to us with more options in it. We only have the two. We have the item one and item two, but no variations on that for us to consider as a council, for given the significant policy ramifications that are at stake. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Rubin. After Judge Stout and Judge Rosenberg, Jim Fox.
Thank you, Chief. I support the proposed revision, and I can't articulate my position any better than Judge Slough did. I appreciate her articulate presentation. Judge McCabe always gets me thinking, though. I appreciate thoughtful consideration. But I do think, as Judge Slough suggested, it's a matter of the inability to share the pain or spread it out. And I think this is a similar policy issue that we face with the WAFM, where we had the small court adjustment. It's just the unique nature of particularly the two-judge courts. And how you distribute, or your inability to distribute that pain, so to speak. On the other hand, I'm certainly not opposed to the matter being vetted more thoroughly with the trial court, presiding judges, advisory committee, and the court executive officers. I think that's always appropriate to ensure that it's been fully vetted. But again, thank you.
Thank you, Judge Stout. Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you, Chief. I really always appreciate sharing a few minutes in the brain of Judge McCabe and his thought processes, and he's raised a good point. But I will tell you that I'm perfectly fine with the recommendation number two. At bottom, this affects really small courts. And if you have a court of two judges, for example, you losing the possibility of an additional judge has huge impacts on a two-judge court. On a 100-judge court, deferring that additional judge has less impact. You can deal with it. It's a question of volume, as Judge Slough indicated. So impact on the two-judge court or the small court is far greater on that one judge. So I think it's, frankly, a tweak. It's not a huge modification, and it's certainly a tweak that's acceptable to me, and I'd be willing to implement it immediately.
Jim Fogg.
Chief, I spent 10 years on the Court Profiles Committee, or Judgeship Needs Committee, that was chaired by Judge Tom Nuss. And these are issues that we looked at very, very closely from 1990 to 2000, I think it was. And what I would like, and following up on what Judge Rosenberg and Judge Schlau said, it comes down to a question of severity of need. If you have a two-judge court that has a 0.9% greater need for a position, that impacts that county significantly more than a 100-judge court that doesn't get two positions, because that's 2% of their judicial needs, whereas you've got 50%, almost 50%, in the small county. But I also think that we're going to need ultimately to look at the issue, as painful as it may be, for those counties which have what have been described as surplus, which have, quote, surplus judicial positions. And ultimately, we're going to have to examine the possibility, I would suggest, of transferring to those counties with greater needs, especially in situations where there are vacancies. We know that the governor is not quick to fill vacancies anyway, but we are a statewide body, and we're going to have to look at the allocation of our resources.
Judge Anderson.
And just one final comment, and you'll know throughout this time, sometimes you'll know that I like to do quotes, but I'd like to offer a different perspective. We've been defining it as a judge problem rather than a people problem. Albert Einstein said, in matters of truth and justice, there is no difference between large and small problems. For issues concerning the treatment of people, all the same. And so this is a problem about the treatment of people, not the difficulty of the workload of the judge. So if you understand that the problems of the people, whether large or small court, is the same, then you'll look to say, how do we share the resources so the people have access to justice all the same? So if we take a look at it from that perspective, then I don't care how large my stack is. What I care about is how many people walk through the door. So this is allowing us to have more people walk through the door in the large and the small. And so that's why I would be in favor of number two, notwithstanding the PJs. How about Marsha and I? We can vote. We're on the PJs team. No, but in any event, that it is about access to justice for the people, not the workload of the judge. And in matters large and small, it is about the treatment of people. Let's treat people fairly, large or small.
Thank you, Judge Anderson. Justice Miller.
Being from the Inland Empire, I know personally the impact of the lack of judges in San Bernardino and Riverside. I think the judges in those two counties would be the first to say that if a small court has a 0.80 need, that they should be included. So I move that we approve both 1 and 2.
Second.
So the second is by Judge Nadler. And did I hear another second? By.
1 second is sufficient, but Rosenberg.
Well, we haven't had our parliamentary primer yet, so mind you.
You guys are
smart. But it's always good for those not watching to know that there's multiple support for a motion. Any further discussion on this matter? I think it's been pretty illuminating. I think it's fleshed out the struggles, and ultimately it really is a policy question, as I think we all agree with that. Let me also say and this is a misnomer, but it's an efficient use. I don't mean this literally, but this reference to surplus judges has been percolating. There is a discussion about that. That is not new, and we've been having that. So, not seeing any further hands raised, all in favor of recommendations 1 and 2, please say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
I believe the ayes have it. 2 noes are noted. Matter passes. Thank you for bringing this to us. It's complicated. It's clear you've worked through it. It's clear it's a policy decision. Thank you, Judge Alexney. Thank you, Leah.
Thank you.